When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three blues, three opinions, one Everton podcast.
Welcome to episode 123 of the Unholy Trinity Podcast, brought to you in association with Sports Social, the UK's only dedicated sports podcast network. And also Fanatics, listen, fantastic. Won a game in the league, didn't concede a goal. We're on top of the world, you know, with smiles on our faces. And to cap it all off, we're joined by friend of the show, been on quite a few times, and that's Frank McKenna. Frank, I'm sure you're over the moon like the rest of us.
Yeah, it was a much-needed result, wasn't it, after so many disappointments in the league over the last few months. And, you know, I think although we were all delighted with the cup performance, that Newcastle defeat, and more the manner of the defeat, really, I think gave us all a few sleepless nights before the Leeds game. But, you know, the crowd were galvanised, weren't they? The team certainly responded to that. I think Lampard, whatever he's done to them in training, you know, Michael Keane sort of reflecting after the match on a different training regime that's been introduced. And I think what gives me some confidence, and I don't want to get carried away, because we've seen this group of players respond. You know, they even responded to Benitez in the early days. So you know, I don't want to get too carried away. But I thought it was encouraging to hear Michael Keane after the game saying there's more intensity in the training. He's encouraging them to play with the ball and to play a more attacking, offensive, front foot sort of game. Which obviously is what Evertonians want to see. You know, that's Everton, isn't it? You know, we're not a crowd who likes to see containment football, who likes to see that sort of dinosaur approach that we did suffer in the early months of the season with Benitez. So I've got everything crossed that is a performance that will continue under the Lampard regime. But as I say, you know, this set of players doesn't instill we with a massive amount of confidence. I think we've got 4 or 5 wins in us in that squad, and that should see us through for next season. But I still think we need a massive clear out and a big injection of big characters and personalities in the summer. We talk about skill, we talk about talent, but the thing that team lacks is leadership in abundance. It's just like, you know, you could see on Tuesday night, as soon as Newcastle equalised, they just went, you know, they just crumbled. And the number of times that's happened with this squad of players where, you know, a setback just absolutely destroys them. So, you know, for me, as I say, don't want to get carried away because we've done that in the past. I think there is enough in there. I think Lampard will, with his coaching staff, get us out of trouble. But I still don't think that should be papering over the cracks of a major rebuilding job that needs to be done with that squad in the summer.
Yeah, we can't forget where we are and the predicament that we're still in. That's a really important thing. You know, watching us on Tuesday, and we've not spoken about this on the podcast, but watching us on Tuesday, you know, like you said, Frank, I think it was evidence again, wasn't it, in terms of the lack of leadership. The way that the confidence is so brittle. So we see it against Brentford, and Lampard alluded to it himself after both those matches in terms of it can go either way with Everton. And the Brentford game went one way. The Newcastle game went the other way after they got that equaliser, especially so quickly. So confidence plays a huge factor in this Everton side, but you need players and you want players to stand up and fight for the club and fight for the shirts and fight for each other, more importantly, and try and get us over the line. But I think, obviously, what we saw against Leeds, it's got to be said that a lot of the, well, I can't really fault anyone on the day, no. To be honest. It was great to see the intensity, the urgency, you know, the players fully committed to close some players down. Seeing that attitude at Goodison, I thought, was fantastic. We've been saying for a long time, when's the last time Everton took a game to a side, you know, looked comfortable in victory? Brentford, you could argue, yeah, we did. That was the first time in a long, long time. But the first time in the league that I've seen that was yesterday against Leeds. And I thought for a minute one, I think, Pete, it's probably fair to say that we beat Leeds at their own game and playing how Leeds would be expected to play and how their fans would expect them to play.
Well, definitely. I thought we were outstanding. I thought we absolutely bettered them in every single area of the pitch. But I thought it was a really clever performance as well, because I don't think anybody expected him to go with the 4-4-2. And I mean, I couldn't quite work out the system watching the game, but he almost played with a low block when Leeds came into our half. And when Leeds had the ball in their half, we set traps, so it wasn't like a constant press. You know, it wasn't that we were constantly chasing after the ball. The players knew when to go. And when they did go, they were successful and we got things from it. And you could just see Leeds crumbling. They just crumpled. And I thought three goals were a good value for it, really. I thought we could have had more. I mean, you had the Anthony Gordon chance in the, I think within like 1 or 2 minutes, Richarlison had another one. I can't remember what Leeds defender it was, sort of slid across the box to block the shot. But, you know, we could have had 4, 5, 6, I felt. And it was just a completely dominant performance. But you could say it was the product of hard work. You know, that's a team that have been working in training again and again and again in, you know, what shape to be in, who should be where, you know, what passes to play, you know, where to press when Leeds have got the ball in different areas of the pitch. And that, I think that's the most pleasing thing for me, the fact that we can just draw the line under Tuesday night. Yeah, it wasn't good enough. Luck didn't go our way. Again, we had the terrible time with injuries. Game plan probably went out the window. The home side had momentum, but we didn't let it creep into Saturday. And that was my worry before the game, you know, especially after Leeds got the 3-3 against Villa. My worry was that they'd come here with a bit of belief and that if we scored first, they'd just keep coming at us. But we just didn't allow them to. We didn't let them get any ground whatsoever in the game. And even in the second half, where Bielsa changed the system, again, we weren't fazed by it. We just didn't let them back in. And there were some players for me that had the best performance in an Everton shirt for a long time. I mean, Alex Iwobi's probably the standout. I don't think I've seen him play so well, probably since the first 1 or 2 games since we signed him. And I was really pleased for him. He just did everything well, everything right. And, you know, if we can get more of that out of him, you know, they'll just add so much to the team, to the squad. And especially, we think we didn't have Demarai Gray, and Ross Townsend didn't come off the bench, and they've arguably been two of our best players this season. So, you know, the fact that we performed the way that we did and we got the result that we did without those players, I think is really hopeful for the games we've got ahead.
Well, Lampard has seen the two faces of Everton in a very short time he's been there, hasn't he? And you couldn't, you know, paint that picture any clearer than the Brentford game and then the Newcastle game a few days later. I think he alluded to, you could see how gutted he was in the press conference when he found out how long Mina was going to be out for. And he said himself, didn't he, that, you know, Mina, he's a great boy to have around the dressing room. He's positive. He's a leader. And I think he said he's a leader about 2 or 3 times. So he's quickly worked out that Michael Keane and or Mason Holgate need someone like a Yerry Mina alongside him to perform at their best level. And I think you're right there, Frank, about leadership. And when we look back, and me and Pete, we were walking down to the game, weren't we, saying we're not so worried going forward. We've got a load of options going forward. It's just, can we keep a clean sheet? And you look at the defenders we've been blessed with at centre-half, you know, in the last few years. And, you know, we've had some solid defenders, you know, Jags, Distan, likes Lescott, people like that, you know, and you know, you could always think with them on your side, you're going to keep a clean sheet. And you can't really say that with these lads, can you? You know, can they keep a clean sheet consistently and work from there? So, you know, it was great to get the goals. And like you said, Pete, we didn't give them a sniff in terms of like letting them play the way they want to play. I mean, Gerrard said about Leeds the other day is that they got basically unraveled in Leeds' style of football, basketball, which is the way they want to play. You have a shot, we have a shot.
and it's 100 mile an hour. Now, maybe either they were a bit fatigued from that game, or just generally we just didn't give them a sniff in terms of trying to get a foothold in the game. And, you know, OK, look, they hit the crossbar with a couple of great efforts from Rodrigo. But, you know, they're 25-yarders. If you're going to let anyone have 25-yarders against you, that's what you want. And you don't want people having, you know, tap-ins and things like that. So, to be fair, I thought we contained them really well. And like you said, Mike, you know, we beat them at their own game, essentially, didn't we?
Most definitely. And it was great to see. Michael Keane alluded to, after the game again, about having that freedom a little bit. And the first goal comes from that, doesn't it? You've got Seamus Coleman pushed high up the pitch. You know, again, funny, isn't it, how time moves on and things can change in such a short period of time. Luca Dean was kind of out to be allowed to go a little bit further forward and be involved in playing the final third. And you look at Frank Lampard just come in and you can see, you know, even John Joe Kenny, because John Joe Kenny was involved in that first goal, wasn't he? He's put that ball across with the outside of his right foot. Just yep. over Dom's head, you know, we get the ball back, we recycle it, and then Seamus is heavily involved. Lovely little ball from Anthony Gordon around the corner, wasn't it, to Van der Beek, and Coleman's followed the ball in, you know, and he's there to pick up the pieces, little header from about a yard out. We go 1-0 up, and it's great to see the players play with that freedom. And Wobie was another one who seems to have a bit of a freer role, and he could sort of influence things the way that he would want to. And it was great to see Seamus get his first goal about 80-odd games, something like that. Mm-hmm. You'd see the emotion on his face, couldn't you, Frank, and how much it meant to him. You know, he's been there, done that. He's been through it all. He understands the emotions of us as Evertonians and how difficult the last probably 6 months has been for everyone. But how happy were you, Frank, to see Seamus get up there, get his name on the score sheet, and we talk about leaders, but arguably lead from the front?
I think Coleman's got that in him, hasn't he? He's obviously a massive Blue. He's a big Evertonian. I mean, again, you know, I want to be optimistic about on the back of yesterday's performance, but we've all got to take some lessons on board, haven't we? And that includes supporters. And, you know, Seamus Coleman has had some dogs abuse this season. And I think it's disgraceful. You know, I really do. You know, I've seen players at Everton who've given, you know, 100%, always played for the shirt, and Seamus is certainly one of them. And, you know, as they're coming towards the end of the career, they start to struggle a little. And instead of getting behind them and encouraging them, we get on the back, you know, which is, you know, we may come back to Ben Foster's comments later. So it was great to see Seamus get on the score sheet. Good luck to the guy. And, you know, again, he will probably say to you, he didn't expect to play as many games over the last couple of seasons as he had, but we've simply not been able to find a replacement. I think the Patterson kid looks promising in under 23 games, but clearly, you know, Lampard doesn't yet see him as a ready-made replacement for Seamus, particularly in the position that we're in. So great to see Seamus. I think Pete said, you know, Iwobi, you've got to be pleased for that lad, because again, I would say, I've always doubted his ability and his talent. I've never really doubted his effort. I always feel as though he puts a shift in, but then almost starts to hide because of that lack of confidence. And again, one of those whipping boys that the crowd has, for whatever reason, selected as, you know, as soon as a misplaced pass goes, you hear the groans and the moans go. You know, we've all played football at lower levels. And you know yourself, if you make a couple of mistakes early doors, it's difficult then to get in the game. If you've got then 30-odd thousand of your own supporters telling you you're crap, then that's not going to help you, is it? So, you know, right throughout the team, I thought they did brilliantly yesterday. And you've got to give the manager and his team, as I say, his coaching team, a huge amount of credit for that, because we just haven't seen those energy levels. They're playing with a smile on the face, which I think helps, because again, I think that for whatever reason, you know, Benitez has introduced a style of play there that certainly didn't suit that group of players. I don't think that they're a top six team, but they're not a bottom six team either. And I think Ancelotti proved that. You know, I think they're a sort of top 8 to 10 I expected us to finish this season, if I'm honest. I didn't think we'd be in a relegation battle, and you can only blame the style of the previous coach for that. So that's great. But I think ultimately, you know, what the big test is Saturday for me. And again, I know we're going to talk about that later on, but I will go back to mentality. And I think this is the thing that Lampard will be working on really hard between now and the end of the season. Can you go away to a toughish, but certainly not an impossible ground in terms of Southampton and pinch something? I'm not necessarily saying we should go and turn them over, but if you could pinch a point there, then, you know, that would be almost as important to me as what we did yesterday to Leeds United at home. Because, you know, as I say, there's just a weak underbelly within this group of players that has cost us dear for a number of months now. And I'd like to see that addressed. And as I say, Southampton, I think, is a big test for them. But, you know, in terms of yesterday, as well as the 11 players on the pitch and the subs who came, I mean, even Rondon nearly scored a worldie at the end of the Dele Alli's ball. I mean, again, you know, if we're looking for sort of green shoots, then Dele Alli's little cameo there does give you some optimism for the future, because, you know, that ball he played into Rondon was superb. Brilliant save by the keeper, it has to be said. And, you know, a good strike by Rondon. But ultimately, there were 38,000 screaming Evertonians who were the 12th, 13th and 14th man yesterday. And if we can continue to generate that sort of atmosphere at Goodison Park, then, you know, we'll comfortably survive in terms of the Premier League performance. And who knows what else, you know, it's all about the cup draw, I suppose, isn't it? But, you know, that crowd can take you an awful long way. And I hope that the supporters, you know, recognise the importance that they can play in terms of getting behind the team and making Goodison that fortress that it had been for many years. But I was saying earlier in the week, you know, one of the ironies is that since the Moshiri windfall, Evertonians have almost become entitled. You know, we always used to have that sort of underdog feel, didn't we? So when we went to Goodison, we thought, well, we've got to cheer the lads on because we're a bit of an underdog team. We've lost that over the last few years, because, and I think that's because of the cash that's been injected to the club. There's almost this feeling, well, you know, we've got loads of money now, so we should just be turning up and battering team. Well, that doesn't happen in the Premier League. Doesn't matter how much you've got. And it certainly hasn't happened as ever. We've wasted a lot of that cash anyway. So, as I say, I hope that the message from yesterday isn't just that the squad recognise that there's a particular way they have to perform. The supporters need to act in a particular way as well. And hopefully yesterday is the start of that for future matches.
I think that underdog tag is a good shout, actually, because Moyes was always lauded for doing an incredible job with limited resources, wasn't he? And on the whole, you know, he had a couple of relegation battles, didn't he? But on the whole, he did a fantastic job. Would he have got that sort of credit if he'd have had a load of money and, you know, pissed some of it up the wall? Do you know what I mean? So, you know, and the thing is, if you turn on Match of the Day, you turn on BT, you turn on Sky, whatever, what the constant narrative around Everton from all the pundits, your Suttons, your Shearers, anyone, it's that 550, half a billion's been spent at that club, half a billion gets thrown around. When, look, in reality, yes, they have overpaid for some players, they have bought some bad players, but, you know, football's like that, you can't get it right every time. But that's thrown around as if we're the only team doing that and no one else is. You know, Guardiola spent probably as much as we have on defenders. You know what I mean? So, okay, look, they're winning titles and they're doing fantastic and they play a great brand of football. Fair enough, but it's sort of lazy punditry, but it just shows you how much those guys control the narrative, which then the fans jump on the back of. And then the fans are on social media going, yeah, and then they start reiterating what's been said. So it just shows you how much they control it. And, you know, it's important to reflect, yes, we have spent a load of money, but like you just said there, Frank, it doesn't give us any divine right to suddenly feel we should be top six because of it.
No, and I think equally, you know, as you rightly say, there's other clubs that have certainly spent as much or didn't have, you know, when we've been spending all that money, the infrastructure hasn't necessarily been in place to make sure that money was spent wisely. And again, talking about supporters learning lessons, I hope the owners learnt a few lessons over the past 6 months or so. You know, I've been fortunate or unfortunate, depending on how you want to put it, within my job to have met some very, very seriously rich people over the last 15, 20 years. And, you know, they do think they know everything about everything, some of them. And Mashiri strikes me as that sort of character. And some of his footballing decisions have been atrocious. You know, we talk about the Benitez appointment. That was awful, obviously. But before that, you know, again, we're saying Iwobi had a great game yesterday, and he did. But, you know, my understanding is Mashiri signed him. You know, my understanding is that the lad from Villa that we've got on loan, Mashiri did that deal. You know, it's nonsense. You know, football owners don't know any more about football. In fact, I would suggest that Mashiri knows less about Everton Football Club in terms of on-field than we do.
Yeah.
I'd rather you three lads select the next Everton player if we had 30 million to spend on someone than Farhad Mashiri. That's not to say that we don't appreciate the money, the cash, the investments he's putting into the team, the new stadium and all that sort of, that's fantastic. But whenever you get owners overly involved in the football side of things, it never, ever ends well. And hopefully, as I say, the supporters have learned some lessons over the last few months. That squad starts to get their head around the fact that what they've been throwing in for a number of years now, some of them, just isn't good enough. But Farhad Mashiri has just got to leave the football to Frank Lampard and his coaching staff and stay right away from it. Stay right away from it. His job is to provide Frank Lampard with the money to identify the players that Frank Lampard wants to play for Everton Football Club. Not that some mate of Farhad's think is going to look great in an Everton shirt. That's not the way forward. So as I say, I hope that, you know, we've reached a little bit of a watershed in Everton's sort of history, in a sense, because, you know, we were all really optimistic when Ancelotti signed his contract. We had a new stadium on the horizon. It's just gone to total shit over the last 9 months or so. And, you know, within any organisation, the guy at the top has to take the responsibility for that. It's not the board of directors. It's not Bill. I know people love throwing things at Bill Kenwright and all that. Listen, the guy who owns the club takes the ultimate decisions. So hopefully, as I say, he's learned the lessons. Stay out of the football decision-making. You've appointed a good, young, up-and-coming manager. The fans have bought into him. I think that's really important as well. He clearly, unless he's a better actor than fucking Tom Cruise, he's bought into the club, hasn't he? You can just, the lad's just got a permanent smile on his face from what I can see. And, you know, he loves that sort of atmosphere of Goodison. He started to feel about the culture of the group. Okay, he's saying the right things, but in a more authentic way than previous managers have said them, in my opinion. He understands the game, the modern game, because he's played in it. It's not one of our squad kids turn around to Lampard and say, what are you talking about? Because he just, well, show us your medals. He's won everything, hasn't he? So I'm really optimistic, as I say, for the Frank Lampard regime. But it's got to be Frank Lampard making decisions with the Goodison crowd right behind the club and the squad responding to that.
I think the hope now, like you said, it is a watershed moment. We brought in Frank Lampard. There appears, well, that there certainly is universal agreement that he's the man to take us forward. Certainly a lot more positive appointment than the previous manager. He started well at the club, 2 wins out of 3. Both games at Goodison, you know, the crowd have been, you know, rightly up for both matches and have certainly pulled the team along, which we're going to discuss that in the second part of the show in more detail. But you see the positivity around Goodison Park now. As much as it's been, obviously, it's still fairly I'm always anxious now. Every single game we've got, I'm anxious now, more anxious than that I've been for a long, long time. But you go the game and you expect more, certainly at home, and we've definitely seen that. I mean, you see yesterday again, you know, things that we've been working on the training ground. That second goal, Michael Keane header, look how we've lined up there for that. You know, that's Paul Clements. As soon as that goes in, Lampard turns around, goes for Paul Clements, and it's a pass on the back because they've been working on these things. And it's great to see things like that that are coming off and working really, really well in a match situation. You know, we've talked about closing down in the right areas. Anthony Gordon, Richarlison won the corner, you know, from out of nothing. He just basically got in the fella's face, won the corner. We go 2-0 up. Those kind of things weren't happening with the old manager and in that old system. And seeing those kind of things is really positive. Obviously, you mentioned there, you know, Denny comes on for sort of 20 minutes and little things he was doing. I mean, that ball was just out of this world, by the way, to Rondon, absolutely out of this world. It was just nonchalant, wasn't it? Just unbelievable ball. And, you know, if that goes in, by the way, I think the roof would fall off Goodison Park. I'm not going to get a statue outside Bramley Moor because that would have been one of the goals of the century, that one, if that goes in with his left foot. But great save by the goalkeeper. But it was just great to see yesterday Everton go out, take the game to a side, be on top, I think, for the whole 90 minutes. Bar, like you said before, Lee, a couple of occasions where they've hit the bar. I didn't feel threatened by Leeds in any way, shape or form. And that's credit to the players, including those who come off the bench as well, who've put a shift in, who've done exactly what they've been instructed to do, who are taking on board what they're learning on the training ground and are playing with more intensity and looking to go out and go and win a game of football. And that's the really positive thing for me, you know. And, you know, you look at even, you know, Richarlison hits the ball and eclipses Anthony Gordon's heel. And I'm sure Richarlison, knowing what he's like, he'll be sulking big style about that because Anthony Gordon's being given a goal. But I don't even think that would take the smile off his face and, you know, Evertonians' faces, because it was just great to see, like you said before, Frank, Everton play with a smile on the face and go out. And again, I think from minute one, there was no way Leeds were going to win that game yesterday. It was as simple as that for me. They lost the game in minute one because of how we set up and how Everton played. And that's a really positive thing. But like you said, you know, it's the test now is the next game. Every game is the next big test, but the test is going away from home. We haven't won away from home since the back end of August against Brighton, which is appalling in itself. Can we go to a semi-difficult place, go there and win the game and do what we do at home? Can we do it on the road? And that's going to be interesting to see. But
Tom, I was going to say, yeah, I thought, you know, the fans did to Leeds what Newcastle fans did to us, basically, in the week, wasn't it? In terms of intimidation factor. You know, you saw Dan James come out afterwards and said that, you know, the noise that the fans produced lifted the players to another level. I think the word he used was like, they looked the great side, you know, which, you know, they weren't probably expecting. And that, you know, massive credit there. You know, we'll come on to mention it in a bit more detail. It's the whole chicken and egg situation. Is it the fans' responsibility to raise the team, or is it the team's responsibility to raise the fans? Well, look, clearly put that argument to bed for me yesterday, you know, in terms of like, you know, guess what? I think the words Frank used were, when you make that noise, it's like an energy bolt around the ground and it lifts the players. And, you know, he's mentioned it a few times in his press and, you know, I do agree with you, Frank. Everything I think he's a very good orator, and he speaks well. You know, which is great to see, because you know, and I was lauding, probably got a bit of stick for it, Stephen Gerrard the other day, who also speaks well and commands respect when he speaks as well. And I think this lad's the same. You know, he's won everything in the game, like you said. And when he speaks, I think he's very genuine. You know, he's played at Goodison numerous times. Bastard scored a couple of good goals against us as well, hasn't he? But you know, he's played there in that type of atmosphere. He clearly knows that it will intimidate certain teams. I think it intimidates most teams, no matter whether you've played at that, you know, you're an experienced player and you've played at the top level all your career. That's going to intimidate, because obviously it's, you know, if you've got screaming fans every time you get on the ball and you give it away, there's going to be 38,000 Blues screaming at you. It is going to be intimidating. So you know, massive credit there, massive credit indeed. And you know, Leeds did show flashes. I mean, that strike, he hit the bar with the second one. If you look at that move, Rafinha gets it on the right. And it's such a clever move, actually, because him and Ayling were standing right next to each other when the ball was circulating over to that side. I'm thinking, why are you standing next to each other? And as soon as Rafinha got it, Ayling's made a run, basically a centre-forward run. He's playing at right-back. Makes a centre-forward run behind the centre-back, our centre-backs. That creates the space on the edge of the box for Rodrigo. And Rafinha's cut inside on his left foot and laid it off. They've clearly worked on that. It was a great move because obviously it drops to the lad on the edge of the box. It wasn't a fluke that they've created that opportunity. And you know, and you need that bit of luck. You know, another day he bends that in off the bar and then suddenly it's a different game. But you know, we did ride our luck a little bit on that. But overall, like Pete said before, I mean, you know, on another day we could have got 4 or 5 as well with a bit more composure in the final third.
Yeah, I think though we're going to have a quick break in a minute or two, but I couldn't discuss the Leeds game and not mention the full debut of Donny van der Beek, because played a little bit deeper than probably he would do normally, but as we know, he can play deeper. And Pete, absolutely exceptional, wasn't he? Did everything expected of him. Great on the ball, picks the right pass, very, very clever. Energy was there. Looks to be a very, very astute loan signing for the last few months of this season.
Definitely. And he was right up for it as well, wasn't he, from the off? The thing that really impressed me about him was how much he put himself about physically, especially when we didn't have the ball. I think there was a great stat, I'm sure, for aerial duels won in the game. I think he was top.
Yeah, I think he won 3 out of 4, yeah.
Unbelievable
in the first half for aerial duels, and I think it went down a touch in the second. But
no, he got most in the game, most aerial duels won, most tackles made, which is just unbelievable, isn't it? And you know, we talked a lot, haven't we, about Everton playing in a midfield two and how it hasn't worked for us. And I have to be honest, before the game, you would have told me that he was playing 4-4-2 with Alex Iwobi on the wing and Allen and Van der Beek in the middle. I would have been really worried, genuinely. But he was so impressive, like you say, he was so composed on the ball, didn't go missing, didn't go hiding, you know, did the dirty stuff as well, didn't he? Got stuck in, made it difficult, and he seemed really up for the fight as well. And, you know, there's lots of pictures going around social media of, you know, him smiling and, you know, hugging the players after goals and after 90 minutes. And you know, for a loan signing to come in and, you know, really be that, I suppose, up for a difficult task. You know, he's come in from Manchester United and, you know, let's be blunt about it. He's in a relegation scrap, at least for now. And he's not gone missing. You know, I think he's shown a lot about himself in the short time he's been with us. So, yeah, let's try and squeeze everything out of him we can.
I know you're dying to give me credit for this, Mike.
Can you insert
like a clip of like 3 podcasts where I've said, can we please sign Donny van der Beek? Even when we were linked with him back in the summer, under Marcel Brands as well. And then under Rafa, we've gone from van der Beek to getting Sean bloody Longstaff, who can't even get in the bloody Newcastle team. So, you know, obviously, thank God Frank can see a player. Maybe you're right, Frank. Actually, maybe it should be us that should be scouting for him in terms of some of the signings. But no, but genuinely, I watched him very, very closely in that Ajax team that got to the semi-final a few years ago, and he played with Frankie De Jong, who went on to Barcelona, who was outstanding. They had De Ligt at the back. They had Ziyech, who obviously moved on to Chelsea. They had Tadic, obviously, that played at Southampton, who was obviously a very good player for them as well. You could clearly see he had ability. But you know, I remember seeing Donny then, and you could just see he's got a bit of everything, and he's obviously schooled by Ajax. And the last player we've had from that sort of schooling was also not a bad player for us, was it? In terms of Stephen Pienaar, do you know what I mean? And if we can snap this kid up on a transfer in the summer, I'd be absolutely ecstatic if we could, because even if he has a good few months with us, I still think we'll be able to get a decent deal at United there, because you know he's been treated appallingly, to be honest, because they've signed him. I'm not even giving the kid a chance. And a few of my United mates who go most of the games have said, like, it's one of the biggest frustrations for them because they, you know, they've had, you know, Fred and McTominay in the middle. And they said, we've got this bloody Ajax kid, you know, this Dutch international who can't even get a look in. And that's the same with Ranić now. He's thought the same as well. So for us to snap him up has been brilliant. And I genuinely think he wouldn't have signed for us. And I think Frank's alluded to that, didn't he? He made it very clear he wanted him and he phoned him and spoke to him personally. He'd have gone to Vieira at Crystal Palace. So for us to snap him up, I think it's a real coup for us. And we saw glimpses of him yesterday. You know, he's just a real technician, doesn't give it away. Very calm and composed when, you know, when there's all mayhem going on around him. And, you know, if we can hopefully keep him fit as well, I think we'd be well worth, I think we'd get him for about 20 million, to be honest.
I think he's a good fit for Everton, Lee. I think it was good that you missed Davy Klaassen out of the Ajax equation there, who wasn't, again, probably never given a fair crack of the whip, to be fair to him. I think the one thing I'd say about somebody like Donny van der Beek, and we've seen this with Everton players who've gone on and played for clubs that we would consider lesser clubs than us, and they've gone on and had good careers at a different club. Manchester United's an elite club. I know we say Everton are a big club. That's fine. Manchester United, an elite club. And there are some players who just can't handle Manchester United. We had Tim Howard, who came to us and overall was a really good goalkeeper, Everton. Could never do it at United. And there's just sometimes a player will go to a big stage like United. You occasionally see it at Liverpool as well. And they just... it just is too big a challenge for them. It's too big a club. Donny van der Beek, I think, and could be a superstar at Everton because he's going to be a big fish in a small pond. The one fear I have when you're talking about summer transfers, Lee, is whether, you know, he does perform outstandingly well for us between now and the end of the season. Let's hope he does. And then in the summer, United say, well, you've got half-decent centre-forward there that we wouldn't mind having a sniff at. And that might be, you know, the price that you have to pay there. But, again, let's try and stay upbeat and glass half full. I think if we get that sort of performance out of him between now and the end of the season, he's going to be a class act for us. And as I say, if we could get Dele Alli anywhere near the sort of form that he was not so long ago, what a fantastic midfield pairing that would be for Everton.
Yeah, 100%. It's great to see, like Pete said, someone come in and just seem to embrace the club and play with that air of quality. He's just so assured on the ball. And let's hope, you know, like you said, Frank, that this carries on for the rest of the season and a deal can be done with United. Obviously, they were keen for a price not to be put and a deal not to be put into the loan deal. Whether that suggested they want to look to maybe selling for a higher price or they've got a future form at Old Trafford, that remains to be seen. But whatever happens, let's hope we have a good sort of final three months of the season with them in the side. But we spoke about it briefly already, and that's about the Goodison crowd yesterday and against Brentford, and obviously how important that is. We're going to talk about that in a little bit more detail on the back of comments made by Ben Foster earlier in the week after this short break. Welcome back to the second part of this week's Unholy Trinity podcast, where we're going to have a discussion about the Goodison Park atmosphere, which for the last two home games against Brentford, obviously Frank Lampard's first game as Everton manager, and also yesterday against Leeds United, there was almost a call to arms, I found, on social media before these games. And the atmosphere was noticeably different. A lot more positive. The crowd weren't getting on players' back for straight passes, things not going our way. And let's get it right, all in all. It seems to positively influence Everton and negatively influence the opponents on both occasions. And what we've seen in the last week, as mentioned earlier on, is Ben Foster, the Wofford goalkeeper, on his Cycling GK on the Fozcast, as it's called, was discussing about how Everton fans are the worst fans at home in terms of turning on their side. Now, I think I could have told anyone that without Ben Foster having to go on his podcast and saying the same thing. But it highlights to me how important we are as fans, because what he was saying, Frank, was that it gives the opposition a real push and it really helps them. And they actually, prior to the game, you said about Watford, happened this season at Goodison when he beat us 5-2. They say before the game, listen, we know, start fast the affairs 5 or 10, and this crowd are going to turn on their own side. Now, it's shown, hasn't it, how important we are as a 12th man, 13th, 14th, as you said before. We should always try and back the team to try and, at the very, very least, not give some kind of advantage to the opposition.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I think Goodison Park is, if you go back even to that great team of the 80s, if you look back at some of the interviews from the likes of Sharpie and some of the younger Trevor Stephen, who I've spoke to about this on occasion, they say to you, Goodison Park is one of the best stadiums to play in the world when the crowd are with you. It's the worst when they're against you. And, you know, when they were going through their tough times in sort of early 83, and Howard Kendall was the cause for him to get the sack. Trevor Stephen, Graham Sharp, Gary Stevens, young players were hiding, because they said it was a horrible, horrible place to play. So it's not new in a sense. And it's funny, isn't it, how things work out? Because I think the two things that happened this week that really helped us was the response of Newcastle United supporters on Tuesday night. Because, you know, again, we've all got an opinion of Newcastle United supporters, haven't we? But wow, you know, come on, credit to them. They created an absolute cauldron on Tuesday evening for Everton to walk into there. And it did affect the team. It massively affected Pickford, in my opinion. I think Pickford's distribution on the night was bloody awful. Don't think he was covered himself in glory for the free kick that went in either. But, clearly it impacted on the whole of the Everton team. And I think we took a little bit of a signal from that. And then on the back of that were the Ben Foster comments. Now, they need to be put into some perspective, because Ben Foster says that. I think somebody said to me he's won twice at Goodison in 16 seasons. So it's not been that great a tactic for his managers to follow. And again, I would argue that of those 16 seasons that Foster's played, or 14 seasons it might be, for most of them, Evertonians have actually been pretty upbeat and behind the team. And that goes back to the point I was making earlier. I think under David Moyes, and then subsequent managers, well, maybe Martinez, certainly for the first season, had an awful lot of support. And then, as I say, it just seems to me, since this financial windfall, there appears to have been a bit of a change in culture within the Evertonian fan base. That hopefully has now changed. So Foster, I think, combined with that Newcastle supporters' performance on Tuesday night, was the catalyst for what we've seen yesterday. The trick now, we talk about consistency of the squad, the players. The trick now is for a consistency from us as Evertonians to try and create that atmosphere every single home match. Much easier. I mean, again, I'll say to you, Michael, it was fortunate that yesterday was Saturday, 3 o'clock. Because again, the game before the league game before that, Duncan, everyone anticipated that we were going to create that sort of atmosphere. But it was an early kickoff, never really felt that great an atmosphere inside the stadium, to be honest. Whereas 3 o'clock Saturday, absolutely fantastic. We've got a couple of games that I think are going to be crucial under the floodlights. The Leicester game is being rearranged. That's going to be under the floodlight. They're the sort of games where I think the crowd can score a couple of goals for Everton almost. So, yeah, let's just keep it going. Let that be the benchmark for the performance from the supporters. It was fantastic to see, absolutely electric. And as Lee said earlier, when you've got opposition players talking about the atmosphere that's being created, you know that you've done something right as a support base.
Yeah, cause it was Dan James. He came out, didn't he, and mentioned obviously the crowd yesterday and basically how that sort of got under the Leeds players' skin almost, and he found it difficult. But that's what we want to hear. You know, we've heard for too long for me, and you know, there's always been a negativity in the last probably 6 months especially, but even before that, you know, going over the last few years where you go to Goodison, you've always enjoyed going to Goodison. And the atmosphere just never ever gets going any way, shape or form. You have players, you have fans giving grief to the same players every single week that you go. Against Brentford, you know, fantastic atmosphere, but I had a fella behind me giving grief to Iwobi, who was warming up and wasn't even coming on at that particular time. Andre Gomez, who arguably got man of the match, was getting grief every single time he passed the ball from people around me. And it's that kind of thing, because when the crowd aren't loud and when it is quiet, players hear this. Make no mistake, players will hear what is being said about them when that negativity is there and the moans and the groans. And I mean, even yesterday, I've got to point it out. After the game yesterday, Alex Iwobi rightly, many, many plaudits. We were all delighted for him. I thought it was great the way Seamus Coleman went over to him and said, "Good, you know, good on you, good for you," you know, with that kind of thing. And, you know, big hug from the manager, big smile on his face. He must have come off there feeling 100 times bigger and so much better about things, you know, his football career. And then someone on Twitter tags him into a post saying, "I'm not being funny, and this might annoy a few people, but it's about time he put a performance in." Things like that, which for me, you know, I know it's not the crowd on a match day, but same kind of thing. Why are we doing that? Why as human beings do we think and do we feel it's right to verbally attack players from our own club? What good do we think is going to come of it? Do we think it's going to positively impact them on a Saturday afternoon at Goodison Park? Well, obviously it's not. If that's me, if I'm playing football and someone's tagging me into a post and giving me grief, I don't want to play for the club in any way, shape or form. Do you know, and that's how I would feel. But we've seen this, and we mentioned earlier on about, you know, every club has got them, but the whipping boys that Everton have got, you know, we've mentioned already Alex Iwobi, Andre Gomez is another one who gets it all the time. Tom Davis is another
player. Tom Davis. Yeah.
You know, it's the same players all the time who are the fall guys. And whether it's social media or at the ground itself, people have just got to rein it in. Just back your players, whether you like them, don't like them, back your players, because it doesn't do any good, does it? And that's what really, really winds me up. And it's without being too negative, it's just nice to see Goodison Park at its volatile best and Goodison Park making a difference to a result. Because like you said, Frank, earlier on, you know, the crowd can bring about one or two goals if we're like that. You know, it's that simple, and it's so important that us as fans do that on every single occasion at Goodison Park, away from home, wherever it might be. You've got to back the lads, and it's so important, especially with the predicament that we find ourselves in.
I think there's got to be a synergy, though. There has to be a synergy within the club between how the players play and how the fans respond. And I think sometimes that's why certain players do get scapegoated. And I've said it several times this season. It's a brilliant example. You look at the Arsenal game and you look at the Chelsea game under Rafa. You know, he set us up tight, organised, defensive, and we got two great results there. You know, 4 points from two really difficult games. You know, that Damari Gray winner against Arsenal, unbelievable. Now, what happens next game? I think it was Palace we played after Arsenal.
That game.
We played after Chelsea. He goes into both of those games really negative, really defensive, and you can see it feed from the players on the pitch through to the fans. The players don't believe in themselves. They're not putting effort in. It's not the same intensity. The fans get frustrated, and I think then they do end up singling out certain players. I'm not defending it, but I think one of the reasons I think you got the response you did against Leeds is the players are doing the right things. They're doing the basics. They're chasing people down. They're working hard. They're working hard for each other. They're organised. I'm not going to romanticise the Moyes era for a minute, because, you know, there were difficult times under Moyes, and, you know, we said it, we overachieved for years on a shoestring budget. But you knew. from those players. You were going to get a performance. You were going to get hard work. There was a standard that was set. There was a bar for Everton Football Club. And I think the atmosphere under the, you know, for those years under Moyes was just consistently brilliant. I loved going the game because you always felt like you were in with a shout. You always felt like you could get a result no matter who you were playing. So, I'm not defending for a minute what happens on social media or sometimes, you know, the way the fans can get on certain players' backs, and you can almost feel the atmosphere in the stadium depress and the anxiety raised sometimes. Michael Keane is a classic. He had a period, didn't he, for a while where every time he'd get on the ball, you could feel the fans getting nervous about, is he going to give it away? Is he going to lose it? Gomez, as you said, Tom Davies, Iwobi. But when the players set out like they did on Saturday, it becomes infectious. So I think you do need that synergy. I do think there's an accountability on both sides. I don't think the fans can be expected to turn up every week and, you know, wave and cheer. I think the players have to be doing the right things.
I think that's bang on, Pete, as well. I think Everton are like one of a handful of clubs in the league now who kind of like, we have touched on it briefly in this podcast already. You can, you know, if they're not performing, they're underperforming, then they have a reputation for fans jumping on them straight away. It's happening a bit at Arsenal occasionally under Arteta. We've mentioned this. They lose two games, Arteta's on the verge of the sack. They win the next three, and he's the best manager in the league. You know what I mean? They're on the cusp of it a little bit. United are going through a spell of that at the minute as well, because obviously they've dabbled around with different managers. They thought they cracked it with Solskjaer for a period. That produced it, you know, proved to be the wrong decision ultimately. But then you've got other teams in the league, like, you know, your Brentford, for example, your Norwiches, you know, all the teams down there. Where, you know, at the end of the day, if they stay up, that's a great season for them, because of where they've come from. Then you've got the teams that are winning trophies in the league. Well, religiously, the last few years, City, Liverpool, Chelsea, you can throw in there as well. So we're in that sort of band of I was listening to the Leicester game on the radio today. They were screaming at their players. You know, suddenly Leicester have now got a sense of entitlement now. Yeah. We should be finishing top six every season. We won the league a few years ago. You know, we won the FA Cup recently. So they're elevated now. You know, we should be, as I said, divine right top six. So I think we fall into that team of, I'd say, Leicester, Spurs, Arsenal are in there, where it's such on a precipice in terms of where we are, where if we do have a couple of bad results, then it does go very toxic very quickly, because we're not winning trophies. We haven't, you know, it's well known, we haven't won a trophy for 27 years. But it's the same with those guys as well, where a few bad results and it can turn into an absolute catastrophe playing at home. You look what Mikel's gone through this season. I think Mikel Arteta's done a phenomenal job there this season. Yeah. Phenomenal job. You know, with what he's had to put up with some of the Arsenal fans on his case, you know, giving him all sorts of dogs abuse. And like I said, after we lost the game at Everton, they won the next five. You know what I mean? And, he's got rid of Aubameyang. He's obviously a bit of a bad apple in there. He's brought through the likes of Smith Rowe and Saka and stuff. You know, you'd probably say he's done a good job, and he's won an FA Cup. So, you know, I think we fall into that select group of sort of teams where it can go very toxic because there's some sort of divine right that we should be up there or should be winning a trophy. Do you know what I mean?
There's a narrative, though, isn't there, that needs to be driven by the leadership of the club. And I think Lampard has already cleverly started to do this. He very subtly said yesterday, we're going to have weeks like this where we have an absolutely fantastic performance and then we fall off. And it's going to take us time to correct that. And as long as, you know, the one thing I would say about Evertonians, because I can be very critical of our fan base for all sorts of reasons, but we're not stupid, we're not daft. So if you've got an owner saying, you know, we're going to win something, like that was his narrative sort of day one, and that shifted then. The whole mindset of the fan base was shifted. Compare and contrast with Moisey, who every season used to say, my main target is to get to 40 points.
Yeah.
And that was the narrative. And we all bought into that. Now, you know, in the end, it got a little bit stale and we all got a bit pissed off with that because we thought, actually, we're a bit better than this now. And then, as I say, you know, that Martinez first season. Again, if you go back to some of the comments that were made where, on Lampard's appointments from the owner, you know, he said, maybe I've been a bit impatient at times. And maybe we as supporters have demonstrated an impatience that's not necessarily been part of the Evertonian DNA in the past. Because David Moyes, many occasions, went 3, 4, 5, 6 games, team not performing as it should be. We weren't all on his back saying, sack him, sack him, sack him, were we? You know, we get behind the team and he'd bring it round. And, you know, I can't remember who said, I'm sure one of you lads said this on social media when we were in that sort of flux of trying to find a new manager. Somebody said, you know, who's that lad at Fulham? He'd be a great manager at Everton at the moment. Yeah. And again, you know, you just wonder, don't you? And listen, I was as fed up with Marco Silva as everybody else. But you do just wonder whether, had we stuck with Martinez for the season and give him some money and see what happens, had we stuck with Silva for the remainder of that season, I didn't think we were relegation fodder that season, to be honest. I think Allardyce absolutely stole a story out of that season. I really do. So should we have stuck with it? So, you know, as I say, I think the leadership, and this is where I think Lampard's cleverness will make a difference, because he's already said after the game yesterday, I'm not getting carried away, and I don't expect Evertonians to either, because Tuesday night is good. We're going to have more Tuesday night. Hopefully we'll have more Leeds games and that type of performance, but we are still going to get some Tuesday nights, and you've just got to let me get on with it and turn things around. But it's going to take time, and as long as we've got that mindset, you're absolutely right, Lee. You know, Leicester City today. You know, Brendan Rodgers is under pressure now. I've heard Leicester fans shouting for Brendan Rodgers' head. So, you know, we're not on our own. But I do think that the 6 managers in 6 years, I think we've got to take a bit of responsibility for that as well. Not Benitez, because he should never have had the job in the first place. And not Allardyce, actually. But I think the others, to an extent, all should have been given a bit more time. And I'd even include Koeman, who wasn't a massive fan of in that, because he was sacked after having played four, you know, his first 5 matches before top teams in the league. He played and we sacked him. And we were
behind, there's a level, there's a standard, isn't there? You know, Ronald
Koeman, Rafa
Benitez, Martinez, we reached the point with those managers where we were just capitulating. We were getting turned over.
We weren't getting turned over. Koeman lost. I think he drew at City.
What was Koeman's final game before he got the sack?
I can't remember. I know it was
Arsenal.
Was the score?
Didn't we get
5-2?
Yeah.
Didn't David Moyes get beat 6-0 at home to Arsenal in his first game of the season one season?
You did, yeah. I remember watching it.
What I'm saying, Pete, is, listen, this is all hindsight for me. At no point, you know, hands on heart, I haven't defended any of those managers at the time. I've wanted them out the door as much as everybody else. But what I'm saying is that at some point, you've got to draw a line, haven't you, and say, actually, we've just got to maybe. And of all the managers that we've had under the Moscheri regime, the two that I'd actually think I would have liked to have seen with Martinez, a conversation that said to him, OK, we're going to give you some money, but also we're going to appoint a coach who specialises in defence and you're going to work with him. And then I'd have liked to have seen Marco Silva perhaps given a little bit more time, because until Pickford threw one in against Liverpool, we were actually having a really, really good spell under Marco Silva.
Well, I agree with you on Silva, because we spoke about this on the podcast before. Yeah. We got very unlucky with injuries and you know, results like the Derby game, which we played very, very well in up until that point. But Martinez, absolutely not. He had money. He had money and he spent it. He had a team of very, very good players, and yet that first season he came in was magnificent. But then teams found us out, would counter attack, and what we found out about Martinez was he didn't have a plan B.
He didn't have a plan B. And but as I say, Pete, I wonder whether your conversation is a different conversation than just sacking the manager. I think the conversation with him could have been, go and get yourself a decent coach to work with your defence. I'm not necessarily saying that would have worked. But as I say, I think if you look at what's happened since, as I say, it's all hindsight. I wasn't crying any tears when Martinez was sacked. I wasn't crying any tears when Marco Silva was sacked. But, you know, Lee's making the point here. All of a sudden, we're one of those clubs that are expecting to get into the top six. Why?
Because when
that happened under David Moyes, it felt as though we'd won the cup. Over the last six seasons, when it's not been happening, it's only happened once, hasn't it, under Koeman, all of a sudden we're feeling as though we're all done by.
See, I don't think the majority of Evertonians that go the game do feel like that. I certainly don't. What I want to see is the fundamental basics, organisation, hard work, doing the simple things. You know, there's times I've stayed on and, stayed to applaud us after we've lost the game because we played well.
Hmm.
You know, and I felt
like you say that, but you know, no one's set up a campaign saying 27 years since we haven't seen an Everton team work on. You know, there is definitely, in my opinion, and listen, there is no one more frustrated than people of my generation in what's happened over the last 27 years, because we actually did see Everton at the time when they were the greatest club on the planet. So nobody's more frustrated than me. But this idea that somehow, some way, Everton have a divine right to win trophies without us as supporters backing the team. And I just think over the past four or five seasons, we haven't been in that mindset. And I think there is a level of entitlement amongst the support. And Mike was saying earlier, lads around him moaning at particular players. Oh, you know who the players are going to be. You know before the game, don't you? Who's going to be picked up? And I'll tell you, three seasons ago, do you know who was in that group of players? Dominic Calvert-Lewin.
Yeah, he was.
Supporters wanted him out the club. He's never going to be an Everton player. He's crap. He's this, he's that. He's the other. Ancelotti came in, found the centre forward in him. So, you know, I take your point, Pete. It's not all about the supporters. But if you're saying to me, have we been a fantastic fan base to perform in front of for our team over the past five seasons? In all honesty, I'd have to say no.
But it's about that synergy, isn't it? There's a point of common sense.
What do you do then? Do you have an attitude going into the game saying, I'm going to give this lot dogs abuse because they've been shite? Or do you go into the game saying, actually, do you know what? Let's get behind the team today and see whether that makes a difference. And we've seen yesterday what a difference it can make.
But they have to give you something to get behind them for.
Yeah, they went from the first whistle, Pete.
If you're at the Brighton game after you've just come off the back of, you know, 1-1 Chelsea away, great team performance, and you set up 5-3-2, letting Brighton have the ball and come on to you, people aren't putting in challenges, people aren't tracking, you know, you ship three goals at home against Brighton, that's not good enough. And I don't think that's a consequence of the fans getting on the players' back. I think that's a consequence of the players not being good enough, having a manager that doesn't fit the club, setting up, you know, completely incorrectly tactically, losing the players, and that filtering through to the fans. You know, I do think that there's a bit of give and take.
Oh, absolutely, there is. Of course there is. You know, and again, I think, you know, clever managers say this, don't they? Lampard said that yesterday. You know, well, the players responded. We were all at one. We were all in it together. But, you know, I've been at games, and you will have been at games, where you sort of 1-0 up and the team are trying to keep the ball. Right? And I'm not talking about under Benitez's regime. I'm talking about previous managers. And there's fans screaming at our players, boot it forward, launch it, kick it forward, kick it forward. And so what do the players do? In that environment, what does a centre-half do? What does a goalkeeper do? They kick it long. They lose possession. They put themselves under pressure. A team equalises at Goodison Park. You can immediately feel the energy drain out of the whole stadium. I've been to loads of away games where Everton have scored first, and you don't get that from the home supporters. There is something within Goodison Park that can make it the best stadium, as I say, on the planet to play in if you're a home player, and it can be the worst. And there's got to be a balance struck. I absolutely agree with you, Pete. The players have got to take major responsibility here. Players have got to take major responsibility over some of these managerial sackings, in my opinion. But ultimately, I think there's too many Evertonians over the past few years who go into that stadium with the mindset of, as soon as so-and-so misplaces a pass, I'm going to be on the back. Mike made the point. A lad's warming up against Brentford and someone's slaughtering him. Come on. That's not, that, you know, what do you say? He's not putting enough effort in his warm-up.
I think that's the thing. That's the thing, isn't it? It's for me, you should always be trying to back your team. We all get frustrated. We all get annoyed. We all get angry. We all probably don't like certain players. We've all been there, done that. But what I would say is that you shouldn't be entering the ground with the mentality of then getting on players' back for either nothing or the first time they misplace a pass. Yesterday, you know, you were all there. The crowd were up. The atmosphere was excellent. Zed Carr, sirens kicking and all that. That's before a ball's even been kicked. So the fans are up and on side and giving the team, the manager, all sorts before they off. So, okay, yeah. The players, you can see they responded. I think they've gone out the way the manager's told them to go out. And they've attacked Leeds. They put them under pressure from minute one. We nearly scored inside the first minute through Anthony Gordon, through pressure. So I don't always think that the players have got to give you something to back your team for me. You've got to go back around. And sometimes when you're going through a difficult period in time, I think the players have got to call upon the fans to help them through, because they all go through difficult periods. Every side in the league does it, some more so than others. And I think we've got a responsibility as a fan base to go to Goodison Park and back our team. Even if we can see the first goal, if we can see this, if we go 2-0 down, get behind it. Because if you don't, the result is defeat, that, in my opinion. If you show them some kind of backing, what's to say we can't come back from 2-0 down and win a game? Because, hang on, the fans are with us here. The fans are pushing us. You know, even if someone just puts a tackle in and the ground erupts, that's worth a lot. It's worth a lot. And I think for too long now, we've been either too passive as a fan base in terms of going there, sitting there, expecting wins, expecting to be top six, expecting this, expecting that. Or we go there and we just want to moan and we want to boo our own players. Yesterday, we booed the opposition players. Every single time we got the ball, they got it. Every time we got the ball, the fans were up. That's the difference for me. That's where we need to be. I can't buy into the fact that we will go to watch our own team and go there with a mentality that we're going to give them sticks from minute one. It doesn't wash with me. It just doesn't wash. And we've probably all been guilty of it. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that I'm totally blameless, but we've got to be part of the solution, not part of the problem.
I think we can safely say this discussion, it's like Brexit should never have gone to a referendum, isn't it? It's not a simple yes or no answer, is it? So there's more than one reason why fans either support us or they don't support us or support the team at the ground. There's several different reasons. Getting, you know, having someone like Benitez in your dugout makes it hard to do that anyway. Frank came over to the Gladys Street. In fact, he went to all four corners after the game. Rafa never did that, did he? Because he knew, you know, he wouldn't have had his name sung, would he? And they're already singing Frank's name. So even throw that into the equation. He's a manager already. You just said it there, Frank. You know, we've bought into him as a fan base because he speaks well and he speaks with authenticity as well. And he, like you said, unless he's the best actor since Robert De Niro, you know, he's clearly doing that, and he's talking from, you know, from his heart, really. If you want to say that. So yeah, I think there's a whole load of issues. You know, why this, why that, but there has been definitely a divine right from us or some Evertonians that we should be, with the money we've spent, you know, with the fact we, you know, let's be fair, under Ancelotti, we were second on Boxing Day. You know what I mean? And we capitulated with a few injuries. So there is that sort of divine right going, we have to be top six or seven minimum every single season. And like I said before, Leicester are definitely going through that. Spurs 100% at the minute as well.
Everyone's saying, just got beat again, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Got beat today, didn't they? I think there's, like I said, there's about a dozen clubs in that little spot there where the sort of, you know, it can be quite toxic if we're not careful. And we fall into that, I think.
100%. But this discussion could go on for hours. You know, we've all got our own views on it and what have you. But we'll call that time on this part of the show. We're going to take one final break and use the last 10 minutes to look ahead to a difficult trip to St. Mary's next Saturday. Welcome back to the final part of this week's Unholy Trinity podcast, where it's time to have a little look ahead to our trip to St. Mary's and Southampton. You know, doing really well. You know, Ralph Hasenhüttl has been playing, you know, some really decent football. Great win against Spurs midweek. Got a draw at Old Trafford, and I thought he performed yet again really, really well. And we've mentioned already, Frank, in the show about trying to go to this kind of place and get something from the game. And it's going to be difficult, isn't it? Because they are riding a bit of a crest of a wave at this moment in time.
They are a good side, well organised. He's got them playing some good stuff. Watched them a few times this season on the box. And, you know, they didn't surprise you yesterday, did it? When, you know, they got the equaliser, got a point at Old Trafford. Didn't really surprise me when they beat Tottenham. I think Tottenham are flattered to deceive, though. I think Conte's initial sort of boost into that squad of players I think that's at the end of its road now. Wolves have gone there and won again today. So, yeah, impressive results, but nothing I think that Everton should be frightened of. I think we should be looking at that Southampton team, looking at the performance that we put in against Leeds and thinking, actually, we can go there and get a result. I'll be honest with you, I'd settle for a point right now. I think, you know, going away and getting a point at St. Mary's would be a good result. But nothing to be scared of, particularly if we can put in the level of performance we put in yesterday. I think there's talk that Gray might be back as well next weekend. That's going to be an interesting call for Frank to make, though, isn't it? Because how do you change a team that plays as well as it did yesterday? He'll also, I think, be tempted to look at Dele Alli over the 90 minutes as well, but whether Southampton's a bit soon for that. But it's going to be a really interesting test. And I was saying on WhatsApp group with my Evertonian mates yesterday, you know, that for me, the Southampton, if we get something from Southampton, I'm going to sleep far more comfortably over the next few weeks, because I think that's where our form needs to dramatically improve. And as I say, I'm not talking about going away from home and smashing teams and picking up 3 points, but we've been woeful, haven't we, on the road? Absolutely woeful. And we've got to start to go, and even if it's just pinching a few draws and making sure that we get the right results in the home games that we've got coming up, the winnable ones. The next one's, I think, City, isn't it? So I think, you know, going to Southampton, getting a point, even better, would be nice. That would be fantastic. But, yeah, you know, it's going to be a tough challenge. But as I say, I don't think an insurmountable one for me.
No, and your point there about, obviously, you know, if Demai agrees fit, does he come back in? And we never thought we'd say that this season after how well he's performed. But you look at the performance from both Anthony Gordon, who yet again against Leeds, I thought he was exceptional.
Oh, outstanding.
You know, he's becoming a player now who's one of the first names on the team sheet for me. Just the way he conducts himself and what he brings to that side is great. Richarlison again, you know, absolutely full of it again. He just looks like he's really up for it. Under Frank Lampard, you've got then, you know, Mikalenko. He's, you know, he did fairly well against Brentford, I thought, in the cup. Got struck down with COVID and missed the game against Newcastle and missed the game against Leeds. The manager has already said he's going to be back for the Southampton game. John Joe Kenny was exceptional, I thought, against Leeds. You know, he got Rafinha hooked off at half time because I thought he managed him really, really well. So there's going to be questions there for the manager, isn't it, Lee? Whether he goes in there with that same start 11, provided everyone is fit to play, or whether he looks to tweak things, because he always says, doesn't he, that players will be starting a game on form. How they perform in training, Alex Iwobi has been the prime example. He's been doing really well in training, and rightly in his mind got the starting position against Leeds. But do you think he's going to make any kind of changes if everyone's fit?
It's hard to say at the minute. He clearly stuck by the players after the Brentford game. And he said that, didn't he, going into Newcastle? He said the way they performed at Brentford, I wanted to show them that you were that good, I'm going to pick you for the next game. And obviously, you know, they didn't turn up in that game and then obviously made the changes. So he's clearly one of those sort of players that'll, you know, and let's be honest, if you are a player, that's what you want from your manager. You know, if I've got the shirt and I've just had a cracking game and then I get dropped, you know, what message does that send? You know, so I think, you know, honesty is the key for anything. You know, honesty from a manager to a player is everything. You know, if you want the team to be pulling forward. One of the other things I've really liked what Frank said as well is this: I don't want anybody sulking on the bench or anybody sulking or not celebrating that we scored and you're a sub. You know, I want all the subs up and things like that as well. And that's important. We're all in this team together. You know, if you've not been picked today because of a tactical reason, I want you jumping over Richarlison because he scored a last-minute winner as well. Do you know what I mean? And that, yeah. I think that creates team spirit. But, yeah, for me, John Joe Kenny, I mean, you know, well, let's be honest, we were all worried with Rafinha up against him because Rafinha, for me, is a top, top player. I was surprised he hooked him off, to be honest, because I thought John Joe played well against him, but you wouldn't exactly say Rafinha was a disgrace. You know what I mean? And he scored 3 goals in 3 games before that against us. But John Joe should play just for doing 2 Cruyff turns in a row against them, to be honest. I don't think I've ever seen that in my life. He skinned him twice. It was like watching Peter Beagrie back in the day where he'd skin you, go back and skin you again, and then skin you again, and then cross it. Do you know what I mean? But no, to be fair, you know, if Mykolenko's back, that's a dilemma. But that's what you want as a manager, isn't it? If he's thinking now, oh shit, where am I going to put Damari Gray now in this team now? But then
I think you know, I take your point in terms of the player comes in, has a really good game, then they expect they're going to keep the shirt. I think that might be the case at this moment in time in terms of Frank Lampard's regime, because he's still getting to know the squad, he's still getting to know the players. But at some point, he'll know his best 11. And when he does, it won't matter who comes in and how they perform. Once those first 11 are fit, those first 11 will play. And again, you know, sorry to harp back to it, but that 80s side, you know, Kevin Richardson used to come in and have man of the match performances when Kevin Sheedy was injured. Soon as Sheeds was fit again, Richardson was back on the bench. Similarly, Alan Harper came in and had some fantastic matches. But he always knew that once the full 11 were back in, you know, in contention fit, that first 11 were playing. So I think you're possibly right for next Saturday. Lampard might think, well, I don't really know this group yet. Those 11 lads have gone out and proved it for me. Equally, you might think, I made that mistake against Newcastle. I'm not doing that again. And change it up a bit. And again, as I say, it's that away form has been so bad. You wonder whether some, you know, a cocky character that Dele Alli is, because despite his drop in form, he's still got that about him. You could see that, couldn't you?
Yes, yeah, a bit swagger.
You know, he's still got that about him, hasn't he? And sometimes when you go away to a ground like South, you need people like that in your team, don't you? Who are actually just going to go, I don't care where I am, because, you know, I'm the man. And so he might actually look at the Southampton game as, this is the one where I throw Dele Alli in a deck. Who knows? And it would be unfortunate for any player who played yesterday to get dropped. But ultimately, as I say, I want a situation where Evertonians are going to the ground and we know 1 to 11. No, it's not 1 to 11 now, but you know what I mean. We know the team's going to be, barring injuries. I don't think he's going to be there yet with this squad. But he will, I think, in his own head, want to get Dele Alli into that starting 11 as quickly as possible, because he hasn't brought him to sit on the bench, has he? He's brought him as a player who can change matches, influence matches and win games. I just wonder whether the Southampton game might be the one where Frank Lampard thinks, I'm going to throw him in and see what he can do here.
That's interesting to think, definitely. The key for me, like I said before, though, we need, if we can keep clean sheets, we've got enough talent going forward to win football matches, haven't we? Yeah. You know, whether it's Dominic Calvert-Lewin in terms of being a six-yard striker, whether it's Richarlison being an all-round player and a bit of everything, whether it's the pace of Anthony Gordon or Damari Gray, and now throw Dele Alli in the mix with his bit of guile and a bit of sort of, like you said, a bit of sort of, you know, that X factor that he's got as a number 10, if you like. So it'd be interesting to see. But, you know, that key bit is that we've got to stay solid. If we can stay solid and give us a platform, that's where we'll start to see turn, you know, results turning around. You know, you look at the job that fella's done at Wolves. I mean, it's not exhilarating footy, but they've got the second best defence to Man City. You know, they win their game in hand. They're knocking on the top four. You know what I mean? It's incredible, that, really. No, I'm not saying it's exhilarating footy, but he's doing a good job. So, and that, but that's primarily built on, well, we're going to keep a clean sheet pretty much every week.
Yeah.
So let's see. But I agree with you. It won't be easy. Our record there, the only time I can ever remember as being outstanding there was when we won 3-0. I think Lukaku scored a great header, didn't he?
Yeah.
Then
yeah.
The last few times we've been down there, we've been turned over, haven't we? So, it'll be an interesting game. Definitely interesting game.
Ben Godfrey had a horrible game at left back there, didn't he?
I think he did,
last season.
Yeah,
it must have been last season. Yeah, had a horrible game, but and then obviously came on leaps and bounds. But I think it might have been even his full debut that played there, and he was poor. So yeah, it will be a tough game. But as I say, by no means one that you'd think we're beaten before we start. So let's go out and give it a good go.
Most definitely. Most definitely. We've got it, like you say, this is a real acid test now. You know, the home fixtures we seem to be passing with flying colours. Obviously Man City, our next home game, is a different kettle of fish, but you know, we've got to go into that game looking to get something from it. But now this is the one now. Let's go away from home. Let's perform with the same intensity first of all. You know, the players now are beginning to understand what the manager actually wants week in, week out. And let's put it into an away performance and hopefully come away with it. With at least a point, like you say, a point would be, I think, positive. And it would show a little bit of signs of progression. But give us your predictions for the game, Frank. What are you saying?
I'll go 2-2. I can't 2-2. See us. I can't see us not scoring. But I can't. I mean, I take Lee's point. I'd love to think we could get a clean sheet, but I've just got. I've just got a sneaky suspicion they'll be a bit strong for us going forward at home at St Mary's. So 2-2 for next Saturday.
Lee?
Yeah, I agree. I think it'll be a score draw. I'm going to say 1-1. I like the look of that Brozier they've got on loan from Chelsea. Looks a real talent, doesn't he? There's rumours that we've been linked with him, should Calvert-Lewin go. And, you know, if you're looking at signing someone in a, you know, 20 million bracket at the right age, then, you know, you wouldn't go far wrong with someone like him. He looks a real handful of a player. So I'm going to say 1-1.
I'm going to say 2-1 Everton.
Because
he got me on a bit of a high. So a massive low after Newcastle, but now I'm back up there again. If we could, as I say, if we can put that style of our home performance into away performance, then sides won't be able to live with us because of that intensity. And it's important that we take a game to a side away from home, and there's no reason why we can't do it. They Southampton are a good side, well organised. You know, they've had the same manager for a little while now. They've got them playing a particular style. They, you know, it showed again at Old Trafford and against Spurs how good they are as a unit, and they are a threat. I think Che Adams has been very, very good for them since he was brought in from Birmingham. So the dangerous, of course, they are, but. Yeah, I'm on that Everton high again, so I'm going to go for a 2-1 win. Van der Beek will score the winner. So, Matt, just record this. We'll make it back next week.
Let's hope you like, mate. And by the way, Mike, because I've given our fan base a bit of stick in terms of their performance over the last few years, but away from home, second to none, yeah?
Unreal.
Of course, yeah. Of course. You know, it's not about
the away support is just tremendous. And again, you know, I talk to enough supporters across the country who say, bloody hell, you know, Everton were here the other week, the noise they made, and that's even when we've been playing crap. And it's that's what you want to transfer into Goodison Park, isn't it? Even when the team aren't performing necessarily at its best, let's get behind them, as you said before, Mike, and away from home, You know, you can never fault them. It's, you know, we always sell out and we always get behind the team.
Yeah, 100%. And we're all part of the fan base. You know, we've all
absolutely
been over the years. So like I said before, we're not blameless, of course we're not, but I think the point is we've just got to all be unified, especially when it comes to making Goodison Park that, you know, as it used to be, the horrible place to come, because it can win us a game. It's happened many times in the past, you know. So, but that's all for this week, Frank. Really appreciate you taking some time out on it.
Good to see you, lads. Let's hope by the end of the season we're coming together for an FA Cup win special, eh?
Let's hope so. That fifth round tie isn't too far away against Boreham Wood at Goodison Park. But we'll be back next weekend to look back on the game at Southampton and look ahead to the difficult task of Man City visiting Goodison Park the following weekend. So we will catch you then.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three blues, three opinions, one Everton podcast.
Sports Social Podcast Network.